Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yeah, just good times this morning. Things flying around the room. It was like a Harry Potter episode. Jesus.
Who would Chris be if he was in Harry Potter?
I mean, come on. Look at me. I'm not leaving much to the imagination with that question.
Hagrid?
Yeah. I'm not quite that big, but I'm big.
Hagrid's sweet, though. I don't know if you're sweet as often as Hagrid is.
That hurts.
Voldemort. Welcome to On the Bench. I'm your host for this episode, Brendan Sinone. I'm joined by Zach Blaustein, Chris Nee. It's our usual bench crew here as we're entering kind of the dog days of summer already, I feel like, in May. But we actually have news to get to, so that's a pleasant surprise. It's this blend of fellas of, like, we're starting list season, but there's actually, like, commitments and some scoop and things like that kind of happening. So we're going to try to blend a little bit of the creating content and then just talking about what's actually happening. What do we think about that as a setup for today's show? Good. That's not a great start.
We'll talk about basketball in the second hour. Which one?
No, we won't. There's not really anything to talk about. They have like three players on the roster.
We're not talking about them until they have a full allotment of players on the team.
Until they can field.
Until they have double digits, we're just not doing it.
No. Yeah, until they can just do a 5-on-5 scrimmage, we're not talking about them.
I'm good with that.
Speaking of numbers, I think the appropriate place to start this conversation for today's episode is going to be an admission of sorts on my end, and that's that I have to admit the numbers don't matter. They do work themselves out eventually.
And they matter less. They matter less now than they ever have, too.
All right, let's explain what I'm talking about. For longtime listeners of the show, you knew when it was Chris Berg and I. Berg and I sounds like last name. Josh Newberg and myself, we would often argue about the value and merit of counting scholarship numbers. And I think it was a useful exercise, much to the chagrin of pretty much any program you cover. No one likes you counting scholarship numbers, but the fan base was interested. It was helpful, I think, Chris, for us to kind of have a map of what was happening or not happening. Fair?
Yeah. I mean, you want to know the distribution of guys to numbers, you know, different positions. You have sort of a set line. O-line, for example, you probably want at least 12, more like 15. Some are going to carry as many as 18. Receiver, 9 to 12 type of number, so on and so forth. Quarterbacks, 3 or 4. Yeah, so that's why you do that exercise in the old days.
In the old days. But now it doesn't matter as much. And we spent this offseason, you know, I didn't feel as much of a need to do it this offseason as usual. We didn't dive into it as much as possible, but it still ended up mattering less than even I thought it was going to, because FSU ended spring with us projecting them to have ahead of the season 80 to 89 scholarship players is what we had them at. you have to get to 85 with scholarship restriction with the transfer, with the NIL NCAA issue. It had to be closer. It didn't have to be. You either had to lose five in the next 2 years. So we were thinking 83, 82. But guys, none of that really ends up mattering because you're probably going to end up having about 90 players who are scholarship caliber on your roster. Now, ultimately, that's a good thing. When players weren't exiting the transfer portal during the past window, started saying, oh, that wasn't what we expected. And they're going to try to figure out a way to make that work. That ultimately means that some players are going to be PWO preferred walk-ons now. PWO players can receive NIL opportunities. They're not guaranteed to receive that. However, you can't actually do a NIL for play, you know, exactly. So that's not necessarily what they're doing. And I'm saying all this with kind of like a downtrodden inflection, right? Because I'm just sad that the numbers don't really matter anymore. But ultimately, I think this is a good thing for FSU's program. It means you're going to have more depth and quality than you probably have had in a while.
Yes, that is correct. That last piece is definitely where we stand. Depth of this team this coming year is probably going to be as good as it's been here in a really, really long time. And I mean, on the numbers thing, it was weird. Like, I expected a few guys to shed in the sense of, I don't know that their opportunity is great here. You know, older guys who are kind of falling behind, things like that. That usually is sort of a natural process of a handful of those departing. I think what we're dealing with in this new era of NIL and such is that some guys realize, like, man, I got a pretty good opportunity here, both financially and on the football field. And leaving necessarily doesn't open doors that are appealing to me. And I think that's why some guys are now staying. The other thing is, like, you know, when you have a GM, Derek Gray in FSU's case, and head coach is very conscientious of all of these things going on, you know, it's their job. They're going to handle it. And they've been really good at doing roster management in their time here. So, like, I sort of just don't care anymore, I guess is the best way I can put it about the numbers. Like, I don't lose any sleep or really think about it. Like, the only time I think about it is when we're doing an exercise on a podcast like this.
Chris Nieberg. That's who you changed.
What are your thoughts on all this? You're the recruiting guy, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely interesting to learn of kind of that, the way that it's being handled. But yeah, I mean, I guess it creates less of an interest in trying to kind of track scholarships if they're able to handle it this way, you know what I mean? And I think that's kind of what you guys are saying. So
we're not counting them anymore. I'm dead inside. Nothing matters. We're moving on.
The only thing of interest on this topic moving forward is how they manage the NCAA situation of reducing by five over the next 2 years. That is solely the only thing of any real interest to me, is how they essentially put that down on paper to submit it to the NCAA. And who knows if that infraction is even going to still be enforceable in 2 years because, well, everybody's suing the NCAA. Just get in on the fun.
The state of Florida included.
So, and the state of Tennessee and the state of Virginia and a few other states have jumped in there too.
I've heard mixed things on that too, Chris. If they're going to try to just get all five out of the way this year, if they're going to kick it back to next year. It doesn't sound like they're breaking it up and splitting it in half. It sounds like it's a five or zero kind of deal.
I would kick the can down the road, see if things change.
That's kind what I would do too.
Personal opinion on it. So.
Yeah. But again, like, it's even the scholarship stuff, like, doesn't seem to be not mattering a ton at this point. So, and ultimately it's a good thing. It's a good thing if your program has the strength to retain players and to continue to develop them, like, it is ultimately a good thing. If you're still able to make additions and round out your roster, which we will, we'll go ahead and talk about some additions to the roster now. And one of them was a name, both familiar names. One had been on the radar for us for a little while, went off the radar, started kind to reemerge on the radar, and then it happened very quickly. And that first one is linebacker Cam Riley. He's an Auburn transfer. Excellent size, 6'5", 240 pounds, moves really well at that size. Some things in his game he needs to clean up still going into his final season, but FSU thinks there's usable pieces here, and he ends up committing to the Seminoles. Zach, you were in on this recruitment. You had reported on it back in, when was it, December, when he first entered the transfer portal. He actually came to FSU for an unofficial back then. Whining recruitment, committed to NC State, decommitted. FSU doesn't going to take a linebacker, then they do take a linebacker. So please fill us in on the twists and turns of this recruitment and how he ends up at FSU.
Yeah. So basically, he entered the portal in the winter window. They flirted with the idea of taking him back then, had him in for an unofficial visit at the beginning of February, but decided to not pursue just because they felt, you know, good about their room. They just added Sean Murphy at the end of that winter window as well. And he ended up committing to NC State, Cam Riley did. And then a few weeks into the spring window, so late April, he decommits from NC State. And FSU kind of got back into the picture around then. They've been kind of speaking to him on and off throughout the last few months. You know, back when he was first being recruited, I mean, Randy Shannon and Mike Norvell both separately went to go see him in, you know, Auburn. And, you know, they were legitimately interested, but just didn't work out then. The idea and just kind of digging around this recruitment was that he wanted to be at FSU, even, you know, when committed to NC State. So he was open to the idea, especially since they kind of kept him warm. They really turned up the heat over the last week or so. Adam Fuller was heavily involved. So was Ernie Sims, the assistant linebacker coach. And yeah, I mean, they got it done. UCF was the other top contender, but he chose FSU, and he'll be enrolling, I believe, this Friday coming up.
I like throwing numbers at problems. And to me, Cam Riley's throwing not necessarily a problem, but numbers at linebacker room. He's an experienced depth piece. He'll help push Sean Murphy. You need one of those two to be a guy beside DJ Lundy, in my opinion. And then you got the younger group in Justin Cryer, Omar Graham, who's a little bit older than the other two, Justin Cryer and Blake Nicholson. And that's your group. That's your linebacker room. Those are your six, your three deep, essentially. And I think your hope is that, you know, maybe Cam Riley isn't the guy that you want out there every play, every down, every moment of a game. But I think there's things he does very well that he can lean into. And maybe you play him and Sean Murphy somewhat off of each other with regards to what you like with one versus what you think the other does better, that type of situation. I thought Sean Murphy was fine in the spring, but I didn't leave the spring thinking, oh, yeah, he's a bona fide starter beside DJ Lundy. He's definitely shored up that position. I feel great about it. I did not have any of those feelings. I'm not saying Cam Riley comes in automatically inserts himself into that conversation, but I think it's good to have more people in that conversation, especially guys who have a great deal of college reps. And Cam Riley behind DJ Lundy will have, what, second most in that room? Do any of the younger guys eclipse him? They don't, right?
No, because he has played over 100 tackles in his career.
Yeah. Right, he played a ton in 22. He was pretty good in 22. 23 was a little bit of a, you know, up and down season, step back versus his 22 season, correct?
Correct. He's a veteran presence, and I kind of, you know, I think going into the spring window, I guess I didn't agree with the sentiment that linebacker shouldn't be an option for them in this spring window, and I'm kind of glad to see that that they came around to taking a linebacker, just because I felt like there was a big discrepancy in that room, like we've talked about, like with Lundy being so experienced and being that, you know, bona fide starter, and then you have the kind of drop off in that playing experience. You feel good about those young guys, and you know those guys are going to play a role in this upcoming season. But I think it was smart to add a guy with a ton of experience like Cam Riley, you know, and, you know, that's not even to say he's going to start, but I do think that, like Chris said, having another guy seriously in contention for that kind of role is a big deal.
I think if FSU signs two high-level high school linebackers, like in the same class, in the same moment, Zach's going to pour a bottle of milk over his head.
I will.
He'll kiss the bricks of Doak. He'll try to find a fence to climb, but, you know, manageable and where he won't die if he falls. I linebacker, it's Zach's thing. He loves it. Brendan, Cam Riley to player, what does he bring to the field?
So the size is what stands out immediately. He is 6'5", 243 pounds, I think is what he's listed at. Yeah. And he moves extremely well at that size. And I'd like to define like what the movement skills mean, because there's different types. Like when he opens up in space, like there's really good straight line speed, but more so it's like this quick short area agility and even bend, like to kind of get under blocks. And he's really effective playing in space. You see him especially like being a weapon against screens, perimeter game type of stuff. Like, he shows up really well there when you watch his tape. And I think that points to potential usage of, and AB mentioned this, I think, on the X's and O's channel, but we talked about it on the side. And it, we, without having talked to him about it beforehand or listened to it beforehand, we both had the same comp. I think that Cam Riley has the potential to be used in the way that FSU wanted to use Amari Gaynor and how they used him a little bit early on in 2020. And that's when you had more three linebacker sets and you had a linebacker who you could move out into space a little bit to kind of be this pseudo nickel at times, or you can bring him closer to the line of scrimmage and use him as a blitzer. And Cam Riley was an effective blitzer at Auburn, didn't do it a ton, but got a fair amount of pressures. And again, that bend and that length like presents itself as the ability to get to the quarterback and speed things up a little bit. So yeah, there's potential for him to be like a really nice sub package or situational player when you go to three linebacker sets. And FSU used three linebacker sets as much as like no one really does that anymore. And FSU didn't do that a ton last year, but I think they're like top 10 in the country and going with 4-3 alignment. So it's something that Adam Fuller likes to do. I think you have to have the personnel to do it. And Cam Riley presents the possibility to do that. I don't love that he's not super like aggressive when he's, you know, just one of the two linebackers inside having to trigger downhill. There's a lot of passiveness to his game at times. It's not soft. It's not even tentative. It's just, I don't think he always trusts what he sees and goes and attacks it. I don't know if you clean that up in a year. I think really, I mean, what you're looking at is, can he be a effective sub package player for you? And I believe he can. I do have a question like I want to throw back to you though, Chris. Do you think they're taking Cam Riley at linebacker if the transfer market was more robust at wide receiver, wasn't as crazy as it was at defensive tackle? We'll get to defensive tackle shortly, but if it wasn't as expensive as it ended up becoming.
Well, we were dismissive of the numbers, so I can't say, well, you know, you had a number plotted for wide receiver, nothing happened there, so he shifted to linebacker. I feel like that would be hypocritical for me to say that, but there is a degree I think that probably is in play.
This podcast is very numbers-centric today. A lot of numbers talk for us supposed to be talking about numbers.
I mean, let's be honest. FSU's goal is to build the best team they can possibly have for that next season. That is always their goal. How do we go out there and win the most games and have the most effective version of what we want to be on both sides of the ball? I think Cam Riley fits the idea of we want to be multiple on defense and have the ability to do a lot of different looks and show a lot of different things at teams. Well, this is also a position where we brought in a semi-veteran in Sean Murphy, but yeah, we like him. We don't love him. It's probably the description that goes with Murphy. So I think Riley's sort of your, not safety net, because that's a cheap term on him, but I think he's a guy that adds to the tool bag at linebacker. And I think that's the goal there. Do I think they do this if they're more active at, you know, D-tackle, spending more money at D-tackle than they're going to spend, even if they get Suggs or wide receiver? I don't know. I think you circle back. I mean, they brought him in, I think it was February 3rd. It was abundantly clear at that time that they were interested, but they were not all out on getting Cam Riley. It was a relationship builder for a guy who would not enroll until the summer months. And I think they do that intentionally to have the opportunity when May rolls around, we can shift gears and go back to this young man, and both parties are interested in one another. It works out. I think that's sort of how this all works for them. I don't think they get stuck on it has to be this or it has to be that. I think it's how do we build the best 85. But now we know 85 really is kind of meaningless.
And I'm not being critical of the take. I like it. And the way things have worked out, like it makes sense. There's a definitive role for him. To your point, Chris, like throwing numbers at the problem. Yeah, I mean, that's worked for them in the past. It worked for them in wide receiver in 2022. They took four transfers and two of them worked out for you and Johnny Wilson and Micah Pittman. So it makes sense.
Like Zach feels about linebacker, I feel that way about receiver. I wish they went and got one. But I also don't think there was really one they wanted to go get.
No, there weren't ones who were the ones who would have been potential upgrades were all scratched off the board for a variety of reasons. And there were only like two or three of those guys. So that's what the market bared.
They had a great feel on Cam Riley because of the interaction in January and then the visit in February. And then obviously keeping that going to now.
I think a big reason why they got Cam Riley, by the way, like a little backstory here, is I think Keandre Jones, his former teammate at Auburn, kind of vouched for him. Back in when he first entered the portal, that's how he kind of got on FSU's radar. So I just wanted to point that out.
Wasn't NC State pretty salty when he decommitted.
Yeah.
They do a good job with linebackers up there, is my point.
Yeah, they were kind of bringing him in to fill in the Peyton Wilson role. Because they kind of have similar, kind of similar statures. Peyton Wilson's 6'4", 240, and Cam Riley's 6'5", 240. So,
Wilson's ACC Defensive Player of the Year last year, great player. I think 400-plus tackles in his collegiate career. So you're always trying to throw numbers to fix that because you're not going to have a natural succession plan at that position. You don't have enough Peyton Wilson waiting in the wings. Linebackers just aren't made that way. There's only so many in the country who are like Peyton Wilson. Mind-blowing thing, not sidetracked, Peyton Wilson, I'm pretty sure, pretty much does not have anything in one of his knees at this point. So it's just mind-blowing how good of a collegiate player he was. I mean, during the NFL draft, they referred to him as a one-contract player because of the knee health.
They said that about Miles Jack. Did Miles Jack get a second contract?
He did.
There you go. Sometimes you roll the dice there, especially in the second round. It's worth it. I think the biggest surprise here is FSU took a 6'5" linebacker with only two names. That was for you, Zach. I like this addition. It's solid. Solid addition helps out with depth. There's a clear role in a floor in place. Another name that this is an oldie but a goodie and a real oldie, and it did kind of creep up on us a little bit, admittedly. It's funny, I've been doing these where are they now things to kind of fill up time in the summer. It's been a fun exercise. You get to kind of see how far the program's come. You get to get a good snapshot at how effective FSU is at using the transfer portal, not just in who it brings in, but who it allows to leave. And there was one name that stood out of like, man, I bet they wish they had him back. And I was actually going to do content on it. I still might have like three or four transfers out over the last couple of years who could help you out and be two deep players this year. But this guy was going to definitively make the list because we knew that he was a guy that they actually were upset with when he left. Like they wanted, not upset with him, just upset that they lost him. And that is Omarion Duke Cooper. He was a former starter for FSU at cornerback, had a great back half of his freshman campaign. Then in 2022, played hurt pretty much the entire season. I remember Adam Fuller just gushing about him, how he played through injury all year and the amount of toughness he had. And they were going to move him to safety to basically be your third safety, maybe compete with Akeem Dent for the 2023 campaign. Moved him there in the spring. Loved what he did in spring practice there. They were gushing about him after the spring as well. And then he decides to transfer to Colorado. Among several other players, of all the players who transferred out, especially in that window there, it was a national story that FSU was losing these guys to Colorado, and we were just kind of rolling our eyes because the losses weren't that.
Bishop profound. Thomas, who's now at Georgia State, for example.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to turn into like a taking shots at the kids kind of thing, but like we knew what Florida State was okay losing and what they weren't. And Duke
was one they didn't want to lose that they lost.
Exactly, and so they lost him, and he started the season for Colorado, ups and downs there, which was kind of the standard of Colorado's past season. Say all this rambling because Zach, let them know what happened on, was it Tuesday? Yeah, on Tuesday evening.
Yeah, Duke Cooper announced, or I guess Matt Zenitz kind of broke the news for 24/7 Sports, our national reporter, that there was mutual interest in Duke Cooper returning to Florida State. And we dug on it, and Brendan had heard that he was definitely a take. And not long after that.
Yeah, I wasn't able to report on it. It happened so quickly.
Yeah, you provided some good backstory. But yeah, Duke Cooper announced that he was committed to FSU with one T and committed. But yeah, so he reunites with the Seminoles. I think, like, this is kind of a big deal. Like, not that, like, I think he's going to make some crazy impact on this year's team when it comes to just off-field play. But I think he's genuinely, like, one of the most well-liked players that kind of left FSU's team. And I think the staff kind of views it as, like, a big kind of morale boost to this squad. Like, they're all really happy to have Duke back. And yeah, he understands, kind of where he's at and what's to be expected of him returning. Because we don't really see that a lot, right? We don't see a lot of players that leave FSU have the opportunity to return. Although we hear a lot about, or a decent bit about, players that want to return. So yeah, I think he could play, you know, either safety or nickel for FSU this upcoming year. I think that's kind of the goal with him. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a huge value add in the secondary. You know, it provides you kind of a safety blanket at both the safety position and possibly at nickel. And yeah, I think it was surprising to us, candidly, like Brennan said, but it was a good move for both sides.
Yeah, I'm glad he's back. I think, one, he's a young man that understands the operation, how it goes. I think for them to let him back in the door, it speaks to both characters on both sides of the aisle, FSU as an entity, specifically head coach Mike Norvell and other decision makers, Adam Fuller in this situation, for example, and to Duke Cooper, that I think everybody understands one another and they're on good terms. And I think that's a good thing to see in this day and age of college football, where movement is so free and allowed that can still exist. They're not all bad people for leaving the program, and FSU is not just cutting everybody because they think they're bad. Like that kind of idea needs to die, in my opinion. And I think Duke Cooper is a good personification of that.
Can I use that as a jumping off point, Chris? I got something. So the talking point from some has been, should FSU have allowed someone who transferred out
back? If they make you better and they help your depth, the answer is yes. And they're not going to be a disruption to your program. The answer is definitely yes.
How did you leave as part of that too? Yeah. And Zach just mentioned that Duke Cooper is really well liked. Not
take,
as a player, but as a
Greedy Vance, for example. I don't want to dive too much into details, but I think Greedy's leaving for two primary reasons. I think he can make a better check somewhere else than FSU, and I think his role can be greater somewhere else than FSU. And he went to USC, who needs help defensively, and we know his spending in this market. Good for him. I think Greedy walked out the door and general, everybody was good with one another in that conversation. Not that there's going to be an opportunity to return because he's going to exhaust his eligibility, but like that is perfectly fine in this day and age of college football. You only have so many, you're only playing 11 on each side of the ball and 22 depth wise on each side of the ball. So 44 people truly have an opportunity to play before injuries and other factors come into play. And you have 85 to 90 on your roster. So half of them, you know, are going to move one way or the other, and some of them are going to decide to exit stage left. Duke Cooper's not walking into some guaranteed role or anything of the sort here. He's walking in to earn his stripes in the secondary, be a depth player in a secondary that he understands how they operate. He will obviously have to get to know Pat because Pat's relatively new for him, but he knows Adam Fuller. He knows that defensive system. He knows a lot of that personnel that's still back there. I think all those are good things. I think Duke Cooper is a hell of a player. I liked him a ton when he was here. Loved his freshman campaign. Understood the woes of his sophomore campaign. And I'm glad he's back in an FSU uniform. I think it's good for both parties. And he wants to be there, apparently. From what we understand, he essentially reached out, acted like a grown man, and went through the process accordingly.
And it doesn't hurt to add multiple people ask on the board, is he a PWO? Is he a scholarship? Again, it doesn't matter at this point. It doesn't. I don't think whatever he's going to be making at FSU is going to rechange your calculus a ton.
D-Ray will probably punch me the next time he sees me, but that's a D-Ray question.
All right, we'll get D-Ray on the bench and ask all these questions directly and see how that goes.
Tell me how you count your numbers.
I'm sure he'll love that exercise. Put it in the request right now. No, like this is a guy who knows your system, that has sweat equity in the program. Even if he left it, like he left on okay terms and will return on good terms and is well liked, as Zach mentioned. Like it's a fine take. He could probably play safety for you, Zach. Can he also play somewhere else? Like, is he strictly a safety, you think, or are they gonna move him around?
I already said this.
Thanks. Did you? Oh, my bad. I wasn't.
You dropped Nick Orr earlier.
I was going through our Byers Sonnone questions, and they're not great. So I was trying to parse through that while you were talking. My bad. So he could probably play nickel potentially too for you. That's what I get for trying to be a good teammate and set up Zach rather than just saying that. Point being that he adds depth to your secondary, and you can never have too many defensive backs in the way Adam Fuller uses his defense. I will say, like, I think he probably is most likely to contribute at safety, but like they like Devontae Brown. Like he's that's been one thing that's been pretty consistent.
That's
You know, there was optimism in the winter program early on in spring. They liked him. He had to kind of go through some stuff in the spring. I think he mentioned being kind of sidelined for a bit, and ended the spring on a high note too. And they feel good about him. I know the fan base doesn't quite understand that, but that is FSU's view, is that Devontae Brown is someone who, and we're there at practice. Like, there was decent stuff there at the end of camp. Like, he has potential to start for you. And I know that's, and that the Conrad Hussey fan club, Chris, doesn't want to hear that. And, but there's room for like all those guys to play. Like, we saw this past year, safety depth, like, needed to get better, and it's gotten better.
It's a ceiling floor situation with the Brown Hussey thing. Like, I think with Brown, you feel comfortable about the floor being higher because he's experienced, veteran, mature. With Hussey, the ceiling's dramatically higher, in my opinion. But, like, he's got to go and be consistent and do it. You use Brown as a motivation piece to help a guy like Hussey along. The thing is, Hussey has to understand that. Young guys have to understand that. You have to go take that guy's job. He's not just giving it up to you or allowing you to have it.
I forgot where I was going to go. This is not good hosting.
Sorry, buddy. Yeah, I think.
That was it. I needed to apologize to Chattanooga Whiskey, even worse hosting on mine, to Chattanooga Whiskey for not mentioning them until 30 minutes into the podcast. So our sponsor, Chattanooga Whiskey.
It's very good. I actually picked up a bottle of 111 last week at ABC.
You did? You held out on us.
There was also some at Total Wine when I was bouncing around town looking for things as the in-laws and extended family on that side was coming in.
Oh, that's why you're loading up.
I survived.
Yeah, they do a great job. I was thinking about it, like, when I was kind of going through and organizing some of my bottles, and like, the legitimate value that they offer is, like, it's not just because they're a sponsor. Like, when I started collecting bourbon and really building up the collection, I got in Chattanooga Whiskey. I think it was like 2021 ish, and that was like when I was starting to get into craft whiskeys, right? Like, you know, smaller distilleries. And it blew me away how good it was at the price point. And I think what people appreciate, if you don't have a bottle yet of it, if you haven't tried it, go ahead. I would really recommend the 111 proof that Chris is talking about, because you can kind of make that whatever you want it to be. You can mix it because it's higher proof, but you can add some water, ice to it, kind of dilute it a little bit if you're not used to dealing with that kind of proof. And it's never like, it doesn't drink hot, but it's complex still too, and sugary and sweet. It's delicious. Chattanooga Whiskey does a great job. Someone, I think in Wyoming, maybe, said that they got a bottle. I could be wrong. It was out of the region of the Southeast. So they're going national. I'm not saying it's because of us, but I think it's because of us. Anyways, let's transition to now a portal target. Those are two portal additions for Florida State. It seems like the portal is kind of winding down. There's not a whole lot of options left for you, but defensive tackle
We need a random coach firing to happen, or the coach departure. The Halfley. We need a Halfley to happen.
What?
Just leaving for random
reasons. Oh, just because the whole
put a whole team in the portal. Come on, let's do it. Keep it going.
Okay, just keep it going. Yeah, all the never mind. I got thoughts on Halfley and Chip Kelly, but that's for another day.
Let's talk about Brian Kelly's comments.
Oh, yeah, well, it's going to be about defensive tackles, and this will be appropriate. Brian Kelly,
we'll see if they're about to buy a D tackle.
Yeah,
they're not going to buy a defensive tackle. It is true, the defensive tackle market became extraordinary with the price point. And we knew entering the transfer cycle, guys, we talked about it. This was a priority position, not for FSU, but for everyone else. The issue for FSU, if you want to call it an issue, so you already had your two starting defensive tackles in place. You're trying to add a third co-starter type. And it's why probably you didn't get what's the Miami kid's name, Zach?
Simeon Barra?
No. No, the Miami
Jared Harrison.
Harrison Hunt.
Yeah, that's it. You didn't get Harrison Hunt because you didn't have an assured starting role to offer, even if you had snaps still. And, you know, you're in a good spot with Josh Farmer and Darryl Jackson, and the upside there is extraordinary. Point being, there weren't a ton of starting caliber defensive tackles to enter the roster, and much like how it showed up in the NFL in free agency, like this past two cycles. It's an expensive premium position. I mean, the rumored numbers for Damien, oh, well, God, with the two Michigan, Simeon Barra, and what's the other Michigan State? Harmon. Harmon goes to Oregon, and I mean, he was rumored to be close to $1 million. Barra, pretty confident he made close to $1 million and was getting doubled what other programs were offering to go to Miami. Sorry, Miami fans, like, that's what's happening. Deal with it. I don't know what you want me to say. That's good. That's good if your program's invested right now. It's not a bad thing. I digress. Those guys were expensive, extremely expensive. And just if you're Florida State, you can't justify doing that right now. And it's not.
Why can't you justify it?
I don't even think it's a price deal. I mean, that's part of it. You don't want to be reckless with it. But your third defensive tackle can't make twice as much or so of your starting defensive tackles. Yeah.
That's the point I was trying to get you to make. I don't know that people always grasp or understand that in the cost structure of a roster this day and age, that you can't rock the boat and get away with it.
You can try, but it could come back to bite you.
Yeah.
And so that's a lot of background and information that I'm putting out there to talk about the JVR Suggs recruitment. We talked about him on the last episode. He's from Division II, Grand Valley State, got progressively better over his last two seasons. There was a coaching change. Something clicked for him. He's visited Arkansas. He's visited Wisconsin. He's visited Kentucky, visited Florida State. We'll get into that. He's visited USC, and he's visiting Michigan as well, which is his hometown team. Zach reported, and I can confirm as well, that the belief is that USC and Michigan are the teams that you're battling right now. I think it's a three-team battle, which is good for FSU. You're that third team, from my understanding, right now. He visited here on Friday. It was a full-day visit. Got in Thursday evening. The USC offer and visit got set up very late, so they had to move things around. He ended up just being a marathon of a single day. It was more than 12 hours straight of a visit. And by all accounts, like, it went really well. And not just well in that, you know, he liked FSU, FSU liked him, but like the personality, like, checked off like the box there. He measured up, I think, at 6'3", right around there, tall enough, like, to not get like discluded. Is discluded a word?
Sure.
Basically, he confirmed that he was a legitimate target for FSU and how he handled himself during that visit. Just my own like conversation with him. It's a 3-4 minute conversation. I love making big, grandiose like ideas of something very small that happens. But like just the little time that we spent together, he gave me, guys, the nicest, warmest pat on the back. It wasn't dismissive. It wasn't a power play. It was like a, hey, thank you for staying out here and like being out here to interview. I appreciate it kind of deal. Like, it was legitimately like a warm, nice moment from someone. You don't always get that. What, Zach?
So weird.
Whatever.
There is something about the first time interaction. I mean, Brendan's weird. I'm not trying to dismiss that. But like Malik Benson, like personality-wise, was awesome. It stood out to me when we talked to him that night when he came in for his visit. And like that carried over to what we saw in practice. Braden Fisk last year, when we met him, he was like super greeting and welcoming and just the warm, big dude that he is.
Did he give you a warm hug?
Yeah, can you say warm?
No, I thought he only had one arm working at the time because he had come off shoulder surgery. Remember, he had a sling when he came in for his visit. So, but like that carried over to the player he was. But Brendan's still weird. Go ahead, buddy.
I am, but it is like I asked FSU. That was my interaction, and that was my view. And I asked people at FSU about him, and they was told he is conscientious, mature, like, so whatever. My view on it was accurate and based on their estimation. I think FSU likes what, Zach?
I'm sure it's because of that freaking warm pat.
I didn't say it was because of
it. You think he did that to the entire staff, and that's why they left with such a good impression?
No, if he was going around just cupping everyone's shoulder, it would probably be a red flag.
Adam Fuller just smiled.
I feel like at that point, it's a power play.
That's what it wasn't a power play. It can be a power play if done incorrectly. It didn't feel like a power play.
It's like, I made you stay out here till 10 p.m. to interview me.
This is the in-depth analysis of a backpack you didn't know you needed.
I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast. It might be why he doesn't come here. It'd be like the Falk in the Road decommitment. But anyways, FSU's in on it, right? Like they like him. They like his film. He has maturity to him. He's got 2 years of eligibility, passed the measurables. Like there's stuff like, okay, boxes, Chris, are being checked. You're now in a battle with USC, which is very desperate for a defensive tackle, fair to say, because they were in on Harmon. Did not get him. USC has liquid like cash to offer, at least to promise people. And Michigan just won a national championship and is the home state team, although they have a new coaching staff. Yeah, he's from Flint, Michigan. I don't know how far that is from Ann Arbor, but I imagine if you grew up in Flint, you know a thing or two about the Wolverines, right? I do think they have a new defensive staff, though, from what they had last year. I don't know if that'll be a factor or not. You know, FSU really made a push with Odell Hagan's resume and background. Odell spent a ton of time with JVR, and so that was in the exit interview something that came up a few times that he brought up himself, and that was just the production they've had, especially with some transfers. Fabian Lovett, Brandon Fisk, obviously a great example, and what they've done with some of their homegrown talent too. So we'll see what he wants, what's important to him. Seems open to going, you know, away from home. Doesn't seem like he has to stay in Michigan. The fact that he's visited FSU as well as USC. But yeah, that's what I got. That's probably way too much information on it. But you're entering decision making mode here. You know, probably this weekend is kind of the timeline he gave. And I believe he's being very thorough in his process. What do we want to add other than me making it really awkward? And I apologize to anyone that had to listen to that. Hopefully you found it entertaining. And if not, I do apologize.
We started bringing up LSU at the beginning. LSU just offered. He did retweet the offer for whatever that's worth. Brian Kelly says they're not going to pay. So we'll see if they'll pay.
If they're not going to pay, they're not going to land that kid because he hasn't visited.
I think they would.
Yes, we know that they're in the market.
They would pay. They weren't going to pay $800,000 for Simeon.
But they're in the market.
They're LSU
putting out NIL offers.
They would be able SEC, to afford. Baby. They'd be able to afford JVR Suggs. Is what I'm saying. I don't think that like
coaches need to quit commenting on NIL,
or just talk about it super openly. And let's not pretend like it's not a thing that you don't
see.
Boise State head coach. That's crazy.
Dude, he said that he
called all the freshmen are just aching to go to Idaho.
Did you see the full interview? He said 12 of his players got tampered with, and he
that's
said
not
that
many.
Yeah,
well, but that's what I thought. I was like, oh, your roster must not be very good.
He said like one of the players had like a bunch of schools tamper with him or something. But just it's interesting to see a coach. We know that happens a ton, but it's interesting to see a coach like openly complain about it. I think the last one we saw was what, Narduzzi at Pitt, Jordan Addison.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Norvell saying that like.
When but Narduzzi likes to complain. Like I enjoy Narduzzi complaining because he's a professional complainer. I like Pat a lot. I think he's a hell of a good football coach personally, especially on defense. But NIL is not going anywhere, man. Like. The toothpaste is out of tube. Live with it. Understand it. Don't make stupid comments that make you look foolish in the media and can be used against you in recruiting. Like, don't do it. Just avoid it at all costs. Like, less is more in conversating on that if you have issues with it, because it ain't going away.
I do understand the notion if you're trying to build a program of not wanting to always be the highest bidder. Sometimes you will be. Right.
Then that's fine, but don't say we don't spend. There's extremes to the comments. And I thought Brian Kelly's comment was downright foolish for guys coaching at LSU in the SEC and competing with the Alabamas of the world and the Texas A&Ms of the world, who we know are not shy about acquiring roster talent.
Did he say it with a Southern accent? My family. What do we think happens, Zach, with JVR Suggs? What's your feel right now as of Thursday morning? We're recording this and he's entering decision-making process.
Honestly, I probably need to do more digging on it on my end. But if I had to take a guess, man, like, I mean, the dude's from Michigan. And, like, I feel like if Michigan is at least competitive compared to the other NIL opportunities in his recruitment, they're going to be hard to beat, right? Like that's, I guess, my thought. That was his last visit. That felt very – I know Michigan offered kind of later in the process, but he kind of moved things around. Like he was originally going to visit Michigan State, instead just replaced it with the Michigan visit, and then immediately went into decision-making mode. It is positive that Florida State is still, like, as of what, Wednesday, was still in communication with his camp, like, pretty heavily. So that is a positive, and I could see an outcome where they come out on top. But I mean, I don't know Michigan's need at D tackle, but if they're in the market, you know, for him, I would assume that it's at somewhat, you know, somewhat at least, somewhat significant. So we'll see. But I guess that's where my head would go with Suggs is probably the hometown team in Michigan.
Does this count as a crystal ball?
I don't. It's not based off like a ton of inside information. Like I said, I need to dig more on it on my end. What about you, Brennan? Where's your crystal ball?
Don't put me on the spot. I put you on
crystal ball.
I think it'll be Michigan just based on what you said.
Oh, so you copied me.
No, I've said this on the board. I will have a timestamp of when I've said on the board days ago. So
what if I delete it?
Can you? Does he have that, Chris? Does he have that capability to delete my post?
He does.
Oh, that's alarming.
He also knows how to. He knows how to merge now.
Yeah, he's big on the merging.
Big merger.
It is important.
Zach Mergstein.
Chris, where do you think where JVR Suggs is going to go?
I hope he's playing in the Big Ten if he's still playing college football in 2 years. So that could be
FSU. FSU.
I think I said it yesterday. Like Michigan is kind of the default answer for me because he is from Flint. They do have a need there. And hell, they're coming off a national title. But as you mentioned, the communication with FSU continuing is a good sign. I think FSU obviously has a good sales point with what Braden Fist did here last year. And USC is just desperate on defense.
And FSU will be able to like be competitive from an NIL standpoint for and be able to pay what a rotational high-end defensive tackle should be. And then some, I think, too. Like, I don't think that's going to – unless USC gets crazy, that's more speculative on my end. But unless USC just gets crazy and just completely reshifts everything market-wise, this is – you have a lot to offer, basically. I think you can do best of every world. You have playing time. You have development. You'll be able to help some with NIL, too. And I can't imagine had a whole lot of that at Grand Valley State. Again, it's more conjecture on my end, but I can't imagine the Division II program had a bunch of that. Although I will say, I was watching some of his film and it was full game highlight or full game recap. And I was watching some Tony's Pizza commercials up in the Sagawa area of Michigan, and it looked pretty good. So maybe they did have NIL stuff.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does. 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Zach was in Palm Beach, West Palm Beach. Which side of the beach were you at?
It was near the beach, so it should be east.
I think out of that, what a dad joke. I thought I was the only one who did those. East Palm Beach for the Seminole Booster Tour yesterday. It's funny, but ahead of time, you had to ask to get credentialed for it, basically, to go ahead and get access because they sell those out and they don't want anyone just walking in to go ahead and be a media member and interview Mike Norvell ahead of time. That's how it worked in Orlando when the tour started a couple months ago. Zach went, put in his credential, called me yesterday. He's like, I think I might be the only one going. We thought it'd be a chance that it was going to be limited, but he got an email from FSU Sports Info saying, hi, Zach. And it wasn't to all, it was just Zach. And so Zach's like, I think I might be the only one. So we had to kind of prepare, right? Of like, oh, so it's not just you come in with three or four questions to ask. You might have to go over a bunch if it's just you and Norvell one-on-one. Lo and behold, Zach, what happened?
It was a one-on-one exclusive interview with FSU head coach Mike Norvell.
That's pretty cool.
It was cool. I mean, even the setup in the media room they had, it was like a big – or not a big table, just a medium-sized table with a bunch of notepads, like, you know, for media to, like, I assume, write their questions. I had never been in a setting like that before.
Are you taking an old person shot there? That feels like an old person shot.
No, I just generally, like, I've never
– taking offense to being an old person shot, Chris? How held his chest like it was a personal attack on you. Are you even 40?
I may have written questions years ago. I am.
I wrote questions this time, so I guess I'm old.
Hey, but look at you.
Yeah. I wrote my questions down. They had a little water. But yeah, I'm like, there's five notepads there. So I'm expecting, like, oh, they're probably expecting more media to go. Norvell walks in and, you know, that he was ready to kick off the interview. So I'm like, okay, shoot, like, we'll do it. Asked him about a number of things. We have a full, like.
Did you actually say, shoot, we'll do it when Mike walked in? You said, shoot, we'll do it.
No, that's just what went on in my head. Okay. I was totally expecting other media members to walk in, but I was cool with getting the exclusive as well. So, yeah, he answered a ton of questions about, the NFL draft. With 10 players getting selected, he talked about the moment between Braden Fisk and Jared Verse on draft night. He went into a bunch of different things. I think most notably, unfortunately, was the injury update of wide receiver Destin Hill, who he announced was going to be out for the remainder of the 2024 football season due to an injury he sustained in spring ball, which is obviously super unfortunate. Destin was destined to be a major contributor at wide receiver. And it's just unfortunate just with all he's been through that he'll miss the 2024 season. But he did say that he's in a good headspace and he's liked the way he's attacked his rehabilitation so far. So that was positive. And then he provided more positive updates on two guys that went down in the spring showcase, Malik Benson and Terrence Ferguson, the two Alabama transfers. He said that Benson and Ferguson will be good to go at least, into fall camp. I'm assuming, they'll get some work in during the summer. But if you want to read the full, exclusive update on Knowles 24/7, it's there, and it's a really, really good interview with Norvell, and he goes kind of in depth on a number of topics.
Okay, let's add a few more topics. I'm gonna merge them because we want to play a little buy or unknown. Who's it sponsored by, gentlemen?
The Turner Group.
Colin, Amy, Becky, Griff, everyone with the Turner Group. It is quite the family, as they've expanded to Gainesville, Tallahassee, based out of Central Florida, but can help you throughout the state of Florida. If you're looking to get on the home selling market, home buying market, if you have entered that and you need guidance, the Turner Group is where we recommend you to go. No one's going to be as hands-on with a warm touch, I would say, right? Sorry, Colin, to help you in the home buying process. They have a lot of experience, very active and aggressive when needed, but will be very easygoing with you, not a high pressure outfit at all, as some in Miami would say. It's a place we would suggest you to go if you're looking to go ahead and get on the market there. They'll help you out. The Turner Group. All right, buy or Sanone. I'm a little flustered because these buy or Sanones are not good. Circling to where we started the podcast, Josh was right about this too. Outsourcing it to you guys was not a great idea. I'm going to be totally honest, but we have like three or four salvageable ones. And I'll include my own. Byron Sinone from Northern Knoll 123. Randy Shannon. I'm struggling, guys. Randy Shannon haters should not be allowed to complain for a full calendar year if we land Tavion Wallace and one of Ty Jackson, Gavin Nix, or Zadarius Rainey Seal this cycle. Zachary.
Dude, why do I get this question? Have Chris answer it first.
Why do you get the question?
Have Chris answer it first.
Okay, I'll buy because we think he's a, I'll speak for myself. I think he's a pretty good coach. I think that position has improved in his time here, and that would be finally hitting the last piece of the puzzle, which is recruiting at a high to near elite level. Absolutely love Tavian Wallace. If you go and get Rainey Seale, then while you're literally doing something across the entire country to pull off a kid like that, so I don't think that one's going to happen. But Ty Jackson or somebody else of that sort equals that. And plus, I'd really look forward to Zach drinking the milk and, you know, kissing bricks and everything else that goes with it.
Pouring the milk on his head. What's that?
Indy 500, baby.
Oh, that's pouring right.
Milk, kissing bricks, yeah, climb the fence.
I'll buy. Let's go.
You'll buy, but not aggressively. That seems like a tentative buy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're going to land. Like, they're in a really good spot for Tavian Wallace. And, you know, I think I'd probably have them landing at least one of these other names that are on the board, you know, that are talented, like a Ty Jackson or Zay Rainey Seale or, you know, someone like that. So, yeah, I'll buy. Prove me right.
Jasu, buyer Sanone. This is for you, Zach, as well. Despite all the flack he catches, Randy Shannon has turned that room around in much better days, and NFL picks are on the way after Tatum Bethune was the first FSU linebacker drafted since Telvin Smith. How old were you? I think Terrence Smith. How old were you when Terrence Smith and Telvin Smith were playing, Zach?
14 years old.
Was Terrence Smith drafted?
I don't remember Terrence being drafted offhand.
He played for the Chiefs. I don't know if he was drafted. Telvin was definitely drafted by the Jags. Nope, yes. Not drafted.
Yeah, so what's the question?
I'll buy because I think I just answered this in the last one.
This is just to make Zach uncomfortable. Speaking of uncomfortable, Bad Bean asks, buy or soft buy or hard Sanone? Oh boy. You're the first person I trade with in the GM league. Yeah, we got the GM league that I mentioned on the podcast. We found out that Bad Bean's actually the OG. He created the GM league like 20 years ago, and it's somehow lived on through various iterations. It's like this weird full circle. It's not FSU related. I don't know how our paths interacted. It's like Slumdog Millionaire, but for football nerds. That's a hard buy, not hard. Roomba ate my feet. with official denial this week, this is for you, Chris. With official denial this week by Judge Cooper of the ACC's motion to stay, comma, along with his various comments effectively attacking North Carolina as a venue, comma, FSU's administration / Board of Trustees feels better about their case this week than they did at any point previously. Buy or Sanone? That's a hell of a question.
I would Sanone. I think they feel the same way they probably did on April 9th, which is when this decision was actually made in court. All we got this week was the actual written order of denial of the stay. I mean, it all goes back to, and drink every time you hear it, form shopping. And the fact that he wholeheartedly felt like North Carolina's rush to the courthouse was form shopping. The April 9th experience for FSU was a positive. I think we conveyed that coming out of that court date. The last go around at court, which we're still in continuation of, did not feel near as good. I mean, it's a back and forth affair. The truth is they're always going to end up sitting down at a table more than likely and settling this out some form, some fashion. The thing is more you want to have things in on your side versus on their side. And I would say the written order about form shopping is certainly one that goes on FSU's side of the aisle.
Let's see. I prompted people to not ask about buyers known for an ACC championship game or over under receiving yards from Malik Benson. To try to grasp have a deeper conversation, something more entertaining than just, are they going to have 500 receiving yards? And we got Byers Sanone from JDS Null 1999. Malik Benson has 800 yards in the ACC championship game. So thank you for using this platform effectively here and not mocking me. And there's another Malik Benson question. There's how many receiving yards by a rookie wide receiver. All right, guys, I'm going to do my own here. I think at this point is where we're going with it. Buy or Sanone, Chris, the ACC spring meetings coming up this week will result in a Royal Rumble.
Well, I'd be disappointed if I'm not there and it happens. Brendan's going for it, so he'll be there. I hope he takes video, though. I think Michael might go after John Curry at Wake Forest first. He might be the first one he tries to throw over the rope, and then Jim will obviously be the second one. But maybe Jim's the final boss for those that watch wrestling. Anyways, no, I actually think it's going to be kind of oddly calm and civil despite all of the unrest. Like, I feel like last year was a disruption point, and now we're just in lawsuit phase. So, yeah, I think in all, there's going to be a decline of comment, and not kumbaya, but essentially, like, it is what it is. We are where we are. Two schools are suing the league. I don't think either of those schools are about to change their mind about their intentions to attempt to depart the league. So,
hear me out. What if, in like some NWO-ish like heel turn, maybe, okay, yeah, this is it. So I was going to say North Carolina, Bubba comes out of the woodworks and declares that North Carolina is also suing the ACC during.
Well, I mean, holy hell, like doors will get kicked down. The fight might spill over literally into the pool. I mean, yeah, I mean, if that happens, I'm getting my car and driving to Amelia Island. That's where is where it is.
And you're right? Going to join in on the – we're just going to all start.
I'm not going to join in. I'm just going to get a balcony seat and just watch. Let them tear them each other to shreds. Like, yeah.
And then NC State –
medical bills will still be paid by FSU and Clemson, like everything else in this league is paid for.
NC State will then also follow North Carolina because they're legally – they have to just play each other all the time now, right? Just North Carolina.
Dave Dorn's going to be really torn up. Really. What do I do?
We'll see. Yeah, I got a feeling it's going to be a whole lot of nothing as well, but you never know. Last year apparently got really entertaining behind the scenes.
I thought it was kumbaya. Didn't we get it was all kumbaya.
Ricardo Lewis, buyer Sonone, Zach. Yeah, so your mic's on mute. I almost got through a whole podcast. Sorry,
I was handling something big. Bye.
That's what she said. Good show. A warm touch. Go on.
Ricardo Lewis?
Yeah.
Who's that?
The former Auburn player?
Oh, Jesus Christ. No, all right, we're ending the show.
You mean Byron Lewis?
Yeah. I thought
God to know. And you thought Zach fumbled at the end.
Jeez, yeah, what? You're like, woo. I'm like, I looked up Ricardo Lewis and I remember that name. He's the one that made the crazy catch, right?
Yes.
Zach. Byron Lewis. Buyer Sonone.
Oh, that's how it's done. Nice. Oh, much better, guys.
Why do you buy?
He's the full package. I did an interview with him this week, and he's one of the best interviews in the class. His information recall is ridiculous. He remembered a conversation he had in eighth grade with Mike Norvell, where Norvell said essentially, you know, we're gonna win with or without you, and like, we want you, but like, you know, you're not Florida State's savior. And I think this isn't a thing that he just tells Byron Lewis, but it's a common thing that Norvell says. And like, for Byron to remember that, and you know, his quote was like, you know, I want to be a part of that, you know what I mean, considering like, he's like, they're winning without me now, because back when obviously he had that conversation in eighth grade, FSU was not winning on the field. I think Florida State's really surged up in Byron Lewis's recruitment. They love him. They arguably their top guy at running back right now, when you consider mutual interests and all that. They're battling Ohio State and Miami, really. I think Ohio State's probably a bigger factor than Miami at this point. But yeah, FSU will get the last OB in June, and he's expected to make a summer commitment. So we will see how that one goes, but definitely buy Ren Lewis.
You've been great at that today, if I may say so myself.
I'm trying to take over the dad joke role from Brendan.
I appreciate that. So for Brendan, for Zach, I'm Chris. Thanks for listening to On the Bench. I'm going to save Brendan from ever having to talk again.
I'm legitimately embarrassed. Normally I just let you guys, like, it's a bit that I get made fun of. I mean, I'm comfortable with being made fun of. It's part of the device of this podcast. That was bad.
Ricardo Lewis.
Yeah, you thought you got me so bad.
He said Ricardo Lewis, and I'm like, what? Like, where are we going with this? Like, and I just realized he was screwing up. So, like, cool.
This is how you know I'm getting old. I'm just combining names from the past now. All right. Bye.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You're ready, Bob.
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.